everyone, and welcome to the BAM podcast. This time round, a little special 0.5 edition, because it's just me and Stu. Say hello, Stu.
Hello.
We were very lucky to see X-Men Apocalypse way before the rest of yous, so we thought we'd bring you a little review. Carly obviously hasn't seen it. Poor Carly hasn't even seen Civil War yet.
Shocking.
Because she's in America. Is it out in America now?
It came out a few days ago. I want to go back to the fact you said we were lucky to go and see X-Men Apocalypse. But
right, so we've got a bit of an issue here. Stu and I normally agree on most things, but one of us has come out of X-Men Apocalypse thinking it was amazing and maybe better than Civil War, and the other one thinks it's among the worst films that he's ever seen. So
I wouldn't go that far. I'd say it's one of the worst superhero movies I've ever seen.
Okay, so
Just as bad.
Yeah, just as bad. Obviously, this is going to be very spoiler heavy, so watch out for that. I think what we'll do is we'll start by talking about everything that happened up until the curtain went up. They don't even do it in the IMAX anymore.
There's no curtains anymore. Yeah. Just kind of losing the mystique a bit, really. That's not a deliberate pun.
Yeah, so Stu and I were very lucky enough to get tickets to go and see X-Men Apocalypse in the IMAX in London Waterloo.
Yeah.
The last time I saw a film in that particular cinema was Prometheus, which I think is the worst film I've ever seen. So maybe it's the curse. Maybe it's the curse of the IMAX. Are you now going to defend Prometheus?
Well, it's funny you say that, because I was actually on TV the other night and I watched it again.
Right.
And it's still bad.
Right.
But it's not as bad as I thought it was or remembered it being.
No, fair enough. Fair enough.
Well, it's still stupid, and there's still bits in it which are completely...
Maybe we'll have to do an Alien special.
Yeah,
and
we can touch on.
Yeah, we could talk all day about Prometheus. But you're here for X-Men Apocalypse. So yeah, much as we'd like to say it's because of our amazing press credentials in this podcast, it was in fact because we won tickets to go and see it. So yeah, we got to see it very early on, just as the reviews were breaking. We were in the cinema watching it, which I'm sure Stu's going to come back on. But let's just talk about going to the IMAX first of all, for anyone that's still listening and hasn't turned off for spoilers. So we queued for about an hour, just sheltering out of the rain in an alleyway that absolutely stank of piss.
Which set the tone.
So we were in a stinky alleyway with the other competition winners lining to get up, so we could hear all the noise coming from the, quote, blue carpet, because all the cast were there, near enough all the cast.
I was actually surprised, because we were told it was a global... Well, we were told it's a fan screening.
Yeah.
And bearing in mind, the last time we got invited to... In fact, the only time we got invited to a fan screening from Fox was for Deadpool. And that was a relatively low-key screening in a hotel in London.
Mm-hmm.
So even though we knew it was at the IMAX, I kind of assumed it would be like a small screen at the IMAX, not the big screen one.
Yeah.
With hundreds and hundreds of people. And I didn't know that the celebrities would be there. So when I turned up to meet you and our fellow winners, you know, I could hear Tannoy going.
They were definitely trying to get everyone excited in the rain. I don't envy that guy at all.
No, and some guy, I was following some bloke round the corner of the IMAX to try and find the entrance, and he asked a guy for directions, Alex Zane, having a cheeky cigarette. He was less than impressed being asked. I can imagine.
TV's Alex Zane.
Well, I can imagine he was thinking, do I look like staff? Do I look like I work in a cinema?
So we got in, I guess, quickly enough, but it was billed as like a, I think it was a 6:30 start time. It didn't start till about 10 to 8.
I think so, yeah.
Because they were doing the whole celebrities on the blue carpet, and then they were doing this thing where every time they finished talking to them, like, oh, pick a number and one of these lucky people from the crowd can go in. It's like, no, fuck off, I just want to go. As good as the IMAX is, the seats are bloody uncomfortable.
They were, and the kind of the surreal thing was we were sat in the screen waiting for it to start, and the big screen was showing what was going on outside, so we're getting to see like the cast interviews, which that was fine. But I did kind of get a bit annoyed when they were talking about specific scenes from the movie. Mr. X-Man, you do this. And it's like, well,
shut up. We're going to see it before anyone else. Don't tell this scum.
Exactly.
I must admit, seeing Jennifer Lawrence on a 65-foot screen did give me a weird vor fetish. I'm like, just eat me. Do you know the vor fetish? Do you know what vor is?
No.
It's like when you're when you're eaten by a giant something.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, oh my God, eat me, giant Jennifer Lawrence.
No, she looked good.
She looked absolutely stunning. So yeah, I suppose the big twist, we were made to wait through all this, and very suspiciously there were cameras set up inside the screen and the front two rows. You say
twist. It was obvious what was going to happen.
Well, yeah, and then the front two rows were empty for a very obvious reason, and that was they brought the entire cast in. We were within, I don't want to use the term spitting distance, but we were within spitting distance of like McAvoy, Jennifer Lawrence.
Spaffing distance? Is that acceptable?
well, indeed. But almost all of the cast were there, apart from
Fassbender, because he's doing Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
Who else was missing? Do you think there was anyone else?
The guy that plays Beast.
Oh, yeah, Nicholas Hoult. He's obviously off doing another movie. So.
Oscar Isaacs was there, who forever now will now be known as Poe Dameron, no matter what he does. Yep. So he seemed also... James McAvoy seemed to be the one really embracing it. He was doing a funny little dance on stage and just basically loving it.
Yeah, and that's when, for me, that's when they did a bit, meet the cast, did the introduction, and McAvoy said, you know, this is... You're the first people in the world to see this movie, you know, it's a, you know, for the fans. At that point, I was like, yeah, this doesn't you sound smell good. Smell yeah. If your fan screening is your premiere, you know, the spin on it is like, well, we're giving it back to the fans because they're the ones that really matter. It's like, no, because internally, you're probably worried it's going to get a pacing critically. But I had no expectations of the movie, so I was like, well, you know, it doesn't mean it's some crap. Keep an open mind.
I think we're going to have to get into it. So if you've listened this far, please be aware that it's going to be very spoilery from here on in. We're going to touch on pretty much everything that we can remember, given in mind we are pretty old and our memories are not what they once were. But
that's true.
We're going to touch on everything. So please give it a pause, come back to us later, unless you want to know, because we're about to talk about it now. How are we going to break this down? Do you want to just do it chronologically?
So I guess...
Well, that's the thing. Like, from the start, you weren't impressed with the beginning.
I think we should go back to looking at the X-Men movies in general. This is the end of the second trilogy of movies. So we've had the original trilogy, which started back in 2000 with the original cast. So, you know, Patrick Stewart, Hugh Jackman. So we had that trilogy.
Yeah, the Wolverine in the middle.
Well, we count that. I think if we're looking at the pure X-Men movies, we've had... X-Men.
Right.
X2, I think it was called.
I can't remember.
And then, whether it was X3, The Last Stand, or just X-Men Last Stand. But that was the end of that trilogy, and that was arguably a bit shite. No, and I think that was the only one that Bryan Singer didn't do. He did the first two.
Oh, right. The third one not his.
Not his.
Okay.
No, X2 for me is still the best out of those.
Really?
Yeah.
It's the one I like the least.
Really?
See, we're definitely going to be divided.
This is why we have a different opinion on Apocalypse.
I guess so.
So yeah, so we had that, and then we had Wolverine Origins movie, which a shite, I think. We both agree on that one, right?
The predecessor for Deadpool.
Yeah. So, and then we had...
That's a side note. People are going like, oh, Deadpool, R-rated Deadpool, set the tone for the new Wolverine movie. And it's like, you'll find the Wolverine movie was pretty fucking violent. Anyway, that's the site.
So we obviously had the Wolverine Origins movie was not particularly well received. And then
Good little game.
And they've rebooted the trilogy with a younger cast of characters with X-Men First Class,
yeah.
Which I think is the best of the bunch, bar X2. It's neck and neck for me.
Right. I don't even remember the title of the next X-Men film.
The one after followed that. Days of Future Past.
I've definitely seen it three times, and I remember next to nothing about it. This is maybe where it's going wrong. It was just too much glitz and glamour. let it out.
Yeah.
Are you going to edit out that cough?
I am, that's my time.
I bet you it's still in there. Bet you it's still in there.
Time
if it is, tweet us. Tweet abuses too. I remember Little Peter Dinklage.
Yeah.
You shouldn't call Little Peter Dinklage, you'll get offended. Really? Sorry if you're listening, Peter Dinklage. You were a great act. Mm. Loved you in it, from what I remember. Yeah. But
So X-Men First Class, set in the 60s.
Yeah.
Very much, because there's a point where I'm trying to get here when we get to Apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very much like, this is set in the 60s. We had that kind of 60s spy vibe. Man from U.N.C.L.E., all the cool stuff we remember.
Mm-hmm.
Fashions. I think even remember the music they used. It had that kind of 60s feel to it.
Very Austin Powers-y.
And it was really good. And I remember it being funny.
Yep.
Action-packed.
Mm-hmm.
Thought the performances were amazing. I thought what really anchored it were McAvoy and Fassbender. I think the most interesting plot, arguably, was Fassbender's path of, you know,
Magneto Nazi Hunter.
That which is great. And apparently rumours were that was originally, there was going to be a separate movie called Magneto.
Mm.
They did Wolverine Origins, they were going to do Magneto Origins, so I remember. But obviously Wolverine Origins didn't perform as well.
Yeah.
So they kind of folded that idea into X-Men First Class.
Right.
So yeah, that really worked. And the dynamic was those two guys with a very different viewpoint clashing, and it worked. Days of Future Past was the return of Bryan Singer.
Yeah.
Overall, it was good, but it did kind of lose its way at the end. I'm still not quite sure.
I can't tell you what the plot was.
It was the whole thing. The
Sentinels were coming.
Yeah, so it was set in the near future, and they had to go back in to the 70s.
Yeah.
To stop Mystique from killing Peter Dinklage's character, Trask, who created the Sentinels.
Mm.
And so Wolverine was sent back in time. His consciousness was sent back into his old body.
Yeah.
But what happened was, it was one of those weird time things where they did change time.
Mm.
And then, so I think you're supposed to think that everything you had in the original trilogy of movies hasn't necessarily happened.
Yeah. The canon in the X-Men series is not very well maintained.
No, so I kind of came out of that feeling like, all right, okay, so stuff's changed, but so those other movies haven't happened.
Have they? They've taken a great amount of liberties.
Yeah,
which of course every comic does time travel, or eventually always does.
No, absolutely. I'm not precious about the continuity, but I'll come back to that point. Actually, is that I've got a bugbear about the X-Men movies in general, which is linked to that continuity argument.
Right.
So X-Men Apocalypse, set in the '80s.
Yeah.
So, and again, they make a point in this movie of referring back to the last two. So they make a point of. Spoiler, Moira MacTaggert, the character's back from X-Men First Class.
Yeah.
And they make a point of mentioning the Cuban Missile Crisis from 1962. And that, you know, they mention it in, you know, characters talk about it. You see news footage from that era on TVs to kind of remind you of that happening. You have flashbacks. They actually use footage from those movies to remind you it's the 60s. You also have that referring to the incident in 1973 when, as it turns out, Mystique's now a kind of legendary hero.
Yeah, it's called Cure to Mutants.
Yeah, and you see those footage bits again, but this is another 10 years down the line. This is 1983. And yet no one seems to have aged.
No, they did. So, I can totally understand why they started this trilogy going, oh, it'll be fun to do one every decade, but there are definite glaring omissions that no one is aging as they should be.
Particularly when they're banging you on the head about it in this movie. They're saying, this happened in 1962. This happened in 1973.
Yeah.
You know, because you get another character coming back. Alex Summers, Havoc, who was one of the main characters in First Class.
He's got longer hair now. That's longer hair. 10 years have passed.
But no, it's 20 years, isn't it? It's 20 years on. He's aged, well, 5 years, you know.
If that.
So that's a little minor thing. So here we are. We're in 1983.
Mm-hmm.
X-Men Apocalypse, teased in the end credits sequence in Days of Future Past.
Oh, yeah, so it was.
Where you see a very young Egyptian boy top a pyramid.
Yeah.
And they're chanting En Sabaneur, which is his ancient name.
Yeah.
And so here we are. This is what they've been touting. It's going to be bigger and better. It's more mutants than ever before, more X-Men than ever before, they were shouting. I don't know if it is. It seems just as
many. I wasn't keeping a tally. There was a lot. There was a lot of them. We'll get into it, but I reckon this is not... I reckon there's going to be a director's cut because I have a feeling this is not the edit that was destined. Right. There's a lot of, not so much plot holes, but there's definitely areas unexplored that we've already seen teaser shots for. So if there's a director's cut out there, we're going to see a lot more mutants.
I think you will. There's lots of things that were left hanging or weren't really explained.
Mm.
And they did this with Days of Future Past, I think. There's the rogue cut, they called it. So Anna Paquin's character.
Yeah.
But was she in Days of Future Past at all? Because I can't remember if she was at all, but I know the road cut has more of her, but I've got a feeling that she was completely omitted from the theatrical version. But anyway,
this is a better Apocalypse.
Exactly. If you listen to this, you probably know anyway.
Yeah.
So go on then. I think I've ranted on about the setup. I think you should.
You've had enough time on your soapbox.
Yeah.
All right. So we start in ancient Egypt. I thought it was fine. Basically,
Stargate.
Right, it was very Stargate, which is fine, because Apocalypse is, by that time, already a living god, for want of a better term. He's meant to be the first mutant, and he's got this weirdly over-complex sci-fi way of taking other mutants' powers. And that's fine, but apparently he has a bit of trouble with people always rise up against him, and that's what happens. He's got an amazingly built pyramid, but apparently it can all be brought down just by one block going down a chute. Very poorly designed, that pyramid. But yeah, great little... I thought it was a great little start. They're blasting away all these would-be assassins and everything. He's ended up getting crushed and...
Yeah, he's got his first lot of four horsemen. Or first four horsemen, we say.
Yeah. And then we travel through time with the intro sequence that reminds us that Nazis are bad because the X-Men sign explodes them.
I forgot that
was my first little eye roll, yes, yeah. Nazis are bad.
Yeah.
Remember. Thanks for reminding us, X-Men Apocalypse. I thought it was a great little setting. I liked that it wasn't just simply ancient Egypt. They went a bit Stargate-y with it. Oh, that was fine.
It jarred a little bit for me, but I have to basically be honest and say I'm not a massive fan of Apocalypse the character,
right?
How he's become over the last 20 odd years in the comics, and for most people they probably recognise him from the cartoons.
Yeah, that's pretty much my base of knowledge with him.
There are certain characters you can get away with on celluloid, and some you can't. So if you look at Civil War. The way they portrayed Zemo, Baron Zemo in the comics wears a very purple outfit and an odd-shaped cowl that would look ridiculous in the universe they've set up.
Mm.
But by changing his origin and making him his motivation what it was, and his visuals kind of worked. But Apocalypse, for me, they've kind of gone for the comic look as much as they can, and it... big purple bellend, isn't it?
Well, you read big purple bellend, that's the quote. Well, you raise a good point. What Marvel does very right is, for all the silliness and sci-fi that is, it puts a serious real-world sheen on everything. And I think when you're getting into an X-Men movie, you sort of go in expecting that it is going to be over the top and cheesy to a fault.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what this film is.
Yeah.
It's
nothing's moved on as far as they've concerned with the movies. It's still the kind of movie you got in 2000 where you have loads and loads of characters, but zero character development.
That's fair.
For me, the issue with this is you've got so many new characters,
and
it was funny listening to the cast interviews while we're waiting for the movie to show, and they were doing the blue carpet and they're interviewing them. Tell me about your character, and they're going, oh, my character's this and she's a badass, or he's a badass and he does this and his motivation's this, and you're like, oh, right, fuck all of that on screen. Absolutely fuck all of that. I mean, look at someone like Psylocke. She had one line of dialogue, I think, scene when she talked. The rest of it was her pouting. And Olivia Munn was talking previously in interviews saying, oh, I used to send long emails to Brian and the crew about my character and what they should wear, what she should look like, what she should do, and blah, blah, blah. And you think, all right, so you're going to get to see some kind of development. Shuffle.
Good costume, though.
Yeah.
Loyal costume, I'll give her that.
That's fine.
I'll give her that.
Yeah.
Was it a controversial casting? I remember someone was kicking up about her casting in this film.
Probably. I mean, the character... Do you know much about the character?
Not super much.
Because the actual origin of the character is, batshit crazy.
Right.
Stuff I used to read in the 80s. One of my favourite series was Captain Britain.
Yeah.
Written by Alan Moore. His take on it. It was created in the 70s. But anyway, Alan Moore took it on and revamped the character.
Yeah.
And Captain Britain, Brian Braddock, his sister, Elizabeth Braddock, was English,
right?
Caucasian,
right?
Had telekinetic powers. Joined the X-Men in the mid to late 80s. And during one of the storylines, she ended up, I think, her consciousness went into an assassin from the Hand that she recognised from Daredevil.
Already, it's losing me.
Who was Japanese?
Right.
So they kind of revamped her, and she appeared as this Japanese woman with Elizabeth's consciousness in it, and that to me was that's a bit rubbish. So what they've done with this, they haven't even mentioned anything about that.
Maybe that was for the best.
Yeah. So I think probably the controversy was probably the fact that it wasn't a Japanese actress.
Oh, okay.
Because for a lot of people, Psylocke is this visual. For me, Psylocke, I remember from the 80s, was not that at all.
Right.
So
it's, right.
You know.
So authentic costume, but not necessarily the authentic character.
Yeah, and I don't even know what her powers are supposed to be in the movie. Like in the
pink
comics.
Pink stuff.
In the comics, she uses like telekinetic powers, and she creates swords using her mind powers.
She kind of did that.
Like Yuri Geller. But it's not explained. It's like, I can shoot.
There's not a lot of explained. Like when we come into this movie, like it's touched on in a line, if that mutants and humans have been living in peace for 10 years.
Yeah.
After Magneto didn't kill the president.
And Mystique's this kind of legendary heroine, but it's post-child, which is not up for being. So there's people
posters of Mystique. Yeah, so we see Mystique helping other mutants in need and not really wanting much to do with them. She just helps them in a jam, like the littlest hobo, and then she's gone again.
Yeah, which is quite cool. Well, that was very early on, maybe. I think that was after the ancient Egypt scene.
Yeah, McTaggart wakes up Apocalypse for no reason. I think that was her sole reason for being in the movie, other than she just had to be in the movie to give it all a happy ending. She didn't really do much beyond then.
No, I've got issues with that as well.
But we did get a cool Arabic cover of Iran So Far Away. It's one of my favourite 80s songs. We were introduced to Young Storm, obviously an iconic role by Halle Berry, now a new young actress, because it's meant to be Young Storm. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, that was very much borrowed from the comics, where we meet her in Egypt when she's a thief, which is how she was in the comics. You know, her origin was Professor Xavier bumped into her.
Yeah.
I think she was nicking his wallet or something.
Yeah.
And he realised she was a mutant. New cast member, so she's younger. She's African, apparently.
Right.
So, again, this is where I get a bit confused with this timeline.
Yeah.
So, in the original trilogy, and this is totally me splitting hairs. You know, you've got Halle Berry, as far as I remember, didn't put on any accent. She was American.
She was just Halle Berry.
Yeah, yeah.
Halle Berry with white hair. Still awesome.
Still awesome, yeah. And in this one, Alexandra Shipp plays her, and she's given her an African accent, which kind of probably makes more sense if you read the comics. So, yeah.
And she rescues Nightcrawler, who was originally played by Alan Cumming. Very good.
Mystique rescues
Nightcrawler from Angel, who Angel's been in a few times, right?
Since he was
first appearance.
No, he was in X-Men 3, The Last Stand.
Yeah.
So
he's been rebooted here.
Yeah, different actor. Mystique, we should say, isn't Mystique, she's Raven, so she looks like Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah.
For most of the movie, which
you think might be something contractual.
I just think she probably went, look, can I not get covered in blue paint?
Yeah.
So a lot of times you see her as Mystique, it's
as
head and shoulders, you know, her head will go. I mean,
yeah.
But yeah, and again, they explain that plot-wise, that she doesn't want to be Mystique, you know, she doesn't want to become this figurehead.
Yeah. Which is fine.
And I was down with that. I like the idea of her being this reluctant.
But good redux of Nightcrawler as well. Seemed very authentic to what we saw in X2, I want to say.
Yes. X2. Yeah.
That's fine. So Apocalypse goes about recruiting the strongest mutants he can find.
Well, why now?
Because he always has four horsemen.
Yeah, but why is he
doing
it?
He's fucking raging because he was about to get recharged again when humans betrayed him and he should be lording it over them. So he's woke up and he's like, right, fuck it.
Yeah.
No more humans, only mutants. So only the strongest will survive. I'm going to bring about the end of the world to get rid of all their weapons. He does this thing where he assimilates all knowledge from TV, which was kind of cool.
Yeah, see, my toes curled at that point.
Did you? Really? I thought it was good.
So he's, what, 1983, so he's in a hovel in Egypt.
Yeah.
Goes up to an old CRT TV.
Yeah.
Touches it.
Do you think it was just the...
He goes, I need to know everything, and by touching a television...
Don't be smudged Isaac's acting like that.
Pre-internet. It's like, you know, it's sci-fi, it's comics. I don't know. I think for me, if you could interface with the internet, you could learn everything.
You find it more plausible. If you're sucking it through the TV.
If you're interface... And I don't know much about Egyptian television circa 1983. But I imagine the network was quite limited. It's putting in one channel on it. And I don't think just by touching it, you're going to assimilate the entire world's knowledge.
Oh, I thought it was fine.
All right, okay. Well, we'll concede on that one.
So he starts recruiting all the strongest mutants, which draws his attention eventually to the X-Men Academy.
Yeah.
But before we get there, we revisit our old friend Magneto.
Yeah.
Who's got some stubble on the go. It's been 6 years. He's went and settled down. Now he's Daddy Magneto. He's got a wife and a kid.
Living in Poland.
Ironically working in a steelworks.
Yeah.
Always surrounded by metal. And he's turned his back. He's had a change of heart. He just wants to be left alone with his family. Doesn't want to be a mutant anymore.
But that was so signpost. You knew it was going to go shit, right?
Well, of course it was. Of course it was. You couldn't have Happy Magneto. We already knew he was joining up with the Four Horsemen because it's on the poster.
Well, yeah, it does. Yeah, fair enough.
But yeah, it soon goes wrong for him. Over the space of two scenes, he manages to lose his family and go on his killing way again.
Do you know, I got the impression watching this movie that Fassbender was just phoning it in. Going back to what I said earlier, that First Class had a really good dynamic between McAvoy and Fassbender.
Sure.
The character arc was really strong.
Sure.
You got a taste of that again in Days of Future Past because you had the gravitas of Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen again.
Yeah.
Bookending it, and then you had them.
And well, McAvoy had to break him out. You hadn't seen him since the beach, and they had to break him out. Isn't the Pentagon?
So that kind of, for me, you've done that.
Yeah.
This was kind of just a repeat of that storyline again, where it's like, we just said, he obviously loses his new family, mightily pissed against the human race, decides to destroy them all, and it's down to Xavier to kind of talk him down again. It's like we've seen that twice.
Did you this is the one bit I find was of poor taste when Apocalypse and his new mates whisk him away to get him on board. They take him to Auschwitz where they lost his parents. Now, we were talking about this in work today, like still going around is that awful picture of the American tourist that took a selfie in Auschwitz. So it's still quite a sacred place. Like, I'm used to like Big Ben blowing up or the White House blowing up, but to like, I understand like from a plot sense why Magneto would want to just wipe Auschwitz from the map, but it just felt a little distasteful to just get rid of Auschwitz.
Well, I just think tonally it goes in a lot with the movie anyway. It's just ham-fisted. It's just clumsy. And again, it going back to what I said about the visual of Apocalypse, because that scene, I think I just laughed out loud, because he teleports around.
Mm.
And so when they're recruiting new members or when they're invading the X-Mansion, it's kind of this big bubble appears and these new romantics walk out of it. And then with Auschwitz, it just looked really, like I say, distasteful. You had like this somber-looking facility.
Yeah.
And then suddenly this big purple bell end crops up. Then you've got Psylocke, clearly bikini waxing, looking all pouty and sultry. You've got your angry death metal angel guy pouting in the background, and then you've got Storm looking all Mohican-y and pouting. This is what, for me, it just looked ridiculous, because Oscar Isaac's trying to say, trying to get Magneto on board, he's trying to make this rousing speech about we're going to, destroy the world and make a better one. And then, while this is happening, you've got Auschwitz and you've got the new romantics. It's just like,
Didn't Angel get a bit of, like, heavy metal?
He got Metallica's Force Horseman.
Bit of foreshadowing, you might say. Bit of, like, maybe too obvious foreshadowing. But, Apocalypse basically seduces, for want of a better term, these four mutants into being his bodyguards by just super amping their powers.
That's all right. He doesn't brainwash them, because
He's just sort of saying, stick with me, kiddo, and you'll be even more. I'm going to turn you all the way up to 10.
He's like a battery, isn't he?
Yeah.
That's one of the things. I still can't get my head around his power set, because he can amplify their powers. He can dissolve people into dust.
He's acquired his powers each time. So he's done it many lifetimes over by taking the powers of other mutants, going from body to body. But his entire moveset is never made clear.
No, because he's technically a god, like the power. Because he can just look at you and turn you into dust.
He's got enough powers.
It's a short fight, right?
It is a short fight. He's still looking for powers he's not obtained, which is what draws him to Charles, or what he thinks draws him to Charles. It may be going after Jean Grey. Let's touch briefly on New Kids. Sophie Turner as Jean Grey. What did you think of the accent? It's fine. I thought she was bloody good.
That's fine. I thought she was good.
For a young actress, she's bloody good.
It was nice to see the dynamic between her and Ty Sheridan, who played Scott Summers. They kind of had that...
Oh, good chemistry.
Good chemistry straight away. That worked.
Straight away, it was great.
But again, with the first half of it had the kind of setup.
Yeah.
And it's kind of abandoned. Whether they're just going to think, we'll just do another trilogy with these guys, perhaps. Mm. But it just seemed a lot of stuff was kind of set up and then let's just move on to a big...
Well, indeed. Like, I kind of think, again, like we're going to see more in the edit because they seem to have dropped Jubilee. Like, a lot of people are waiting to see Jubilee in action. Great. I think she was a first-time actress, I want to say.
I think so, yeah.
Charming young lady. Sorry, I've forgotten your name if you're listening. But she was great as Jubilee, totally viable.
Again, probably, what, 5 lines of dialogue in it?
If that. But yeah, I was really excited to see her get into action. We're getting a bit ahead of ourselves here, but... yeah, she was dropped pretty quickly. So let's talk about the mansion destruction, which brings about the reintroduction of a fan favourite from the previous movie.
Yeah, so Quicksilver's back.
Quicksilver is back. He's not died in Civil War. It's all right, everyone. He's back. He's back.
Actually, segue on that. Do you reckon they killed him off in Age of Ultron because they knew Fox were going to use him again? Do they just think...
Yeah. Definitely.
So I want to know whether he was originally always going to die in that movie, whether they thought, oh no, Fox had done him in Days of Future Past, right, I have to bump him off.
Yeah, but again, played by the same actor, suffers from not having aged. He has a line of dialogue about waiting about for 10 years, and he's not aged aged. But he's decided, because it's the anniversary of Magneto threatening to squish everyone and then having a change of heart. It's all over the TV. So he's decided to go and track him down because he's realised that Magneto's his dad, which was that bit was a bit ham-fisted, I'll concede. Because it is hinted at in the second one. Yeah. But yeah, you could handle that better.
Yeah. So they didn't resolve it. It was like, oh, no. Are you going to tell him he's your dad? Oh, I don't know if I will. I think I will tell him. Oh, no, I don't think I will tell him. It's like, I don't give a shit at this point. It's like, just tell him or not.
What I did like about his character is he keeps making the point of, for as fast as he is, he always arrives too late, which I thought was a good bit of writing. But yeah, basically, he rushes to the mansion, having decided to finally track down Magneto, because he's still got Charles's card. He rushes to the mansion, just as Apocalypse and crew are fucking wrecking... God, what's the brain machine called?
Cerebro.
God, that's a terrible thing. No one repeat that. I forgot the name of Cerebro or I'll be shunned forevermore. and that kicks off the best sequence in the film. I mean, he stole the show last time, running around the Pentagon, freeing Magneto.
Yeah.
And is it... I want to say Sweet Dreams by the Eurythmics,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Good choice of music.
Apparently it took... 2 or 3 months to film, Bryan Singer says.
Yeah, I mean, they've I don't know. For me, it was a good scene, but it's like, they've obviously sat down and thought,
what were
our jailbreak scene from Days of Future Past was a standout moment in the movie. Everyone loved it. Let's do something bigger and better this time.
I think they pulled it off. Do you not?
It was good, but it was a bit too much CGI for me.
Oh, really?
It was a bit of... Yeah, it was fun. It was fun.
I think
but yeah, it was a bit.
I didn't get to see your face, but like the amount of laughs it got continuously, it was like suddenly we've switched into like a comedy movie, and everyone was going nuts for that.
And it did they did have some laugh out loud moments most of the way through the film. I think which helped. I think it's certainly the opposite of something like Batman v Superman, which played itself far too seriously.
Indeed, it did. So no sooner has Quicksilver managed to save everyone, almost everyone, not Havoc. Havoc, I don't think we saw him die on screen, though, in classic comic form.
He's literally written off a bit of dialogue. He was the closest to the explosion.
Definitely dead. So that scene was amazing, and no sooner is it over than Apocalypse steals Charles.
Yeah.
Jean Grey, Cyclops and Nightcrawler hide behind a rock.
Yep.
And we get the reintroduction of Stryker. Boo! Pantomime villain Stryker. I can't remember his military rank at this point.
General, I think.
General. He's back from the second movie.
Yeah.
Was he in First Class? Maybe referenced?
No, he may have been. I think he may have been referenced, actually.
Shout at us on Twitter if we got that wrong.
But actually, the thing with that is, the last time we saw him was Mystique pretending to be Stryker, rescuing Wolverine from the bottom of
the water
in DC.
Was that a bonus scene? I can't remember if that was actually included in the movie or whether it was like a credit thing.
I think it was the end of the movie.
Because, yeah, that is a glaring, glaring omission that I think... I don't know why they've dropped this.
All the X-Men movies have this stuff. Wolverine,
yeah,
the one set in Japan, the end scene for that was Logan in an airport and Charles and Magneto rock up.
Yeah.
And say, oh, we need your help. And it's Patrick Stewart in the canon. It's supposed to be that one set in the modern day.
Yeah.
Days of Future Past picks up from that. And it's set in the future. And it's like, well, did that actually happen? And I think there's a certain degree, this is what I said to you earlier about continuity.
Yeah.
Play fast and loose with continuity.
Sure.
As opposed to comics, I'm totally fine with that. But within your own universe, at least try and be fucking consistent. Because you've got six movies and they don't make any sense whatsoever within this. It's just like, I've got a great idea, let's put this up. And for me, this is symptomatic of what's worse about superhero movies, where they've just gone, let's have this character, let's have this character. They look really good. There's no dialogue, there's no characterization. It's just cool visuals that make no plot point sense at all.
Well, that takes us to another key scene, which I know you had issues with. It was awesome and awful at the same time. Stryker kidnaps the principal cast, apart from Jubilee, who was hiding, but for no reason is suddenly...
Did she actually use her powers in the movie?
Nope.
Okay, right. Nope. So
they were hiding with Jubilee, I want to say, and the kids sneak onto the helicopter that...
Stryker's taken back to the base.
Yes.
And you know where it's going, because as soon as you see like the snowy mountaintops, you're like,
we're back in X2 territory again. Yeah. Yeah. So the kids are sneaking about the base. They come across a cage that's rattling and rolling. What on earth could be in this cage?
I think Cyclops says it's an animal.
Oh, it sounds like an animal in there. What could be in this cage? Man or beast? We just don't know.
I was waiting for him to wink at the camera at that point. Like, fuck's sake, we know who it is.
Hard to do with those glasses on, I think. So we get fan favourite Weapon X version of Wolverine.
See, that I liked, because that is, they've actually... And it's a wanky fan moment, but he's got the headgear on for the Weapon X series, for Barry Windsor Smith. So that was really, really cool. Nice little touch.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember it, but I don't think he was actually filming that scene with Sophie Turner and Ty Sheridan. There's bits where they're talking to each other, but they're not in the same shot together as
Being of movie background, we have the opinion that they were never in the same room together filming that stuff. It is fucking awesome to have like a 2-minute condensed little Wolverine rampage, and then he literally just scarfers off into the snow.
And the problem I had with it just didn't feel as exciting as it should. Like the action stuff, he goes batshit crazy. He's literally proper animalistic, spiking away, slashing away, but it seems a bit flat for me. Like the scene next to where he's on the rampage in the mansion, I remember that being really exciting and kind of yes, this is what you want to see. This felt flat.
It was kind of weird because the principal cast are safely in a cell and like whilst they can see outside and they're going, oh, it's horrible, he's got an arm off, they're in no immediate danger. Stryker straight away does a great heel turn where he's just like, excuse me a moment, and takes the secret escape.
I've left the oven on.
So there was no real peril, but it was still fucking awesome fan service to see Weapon X Wolverine.
Yeah.
And a little interaction with Jean Grey, which is kind of weird because...
Obviously he has feelings for her.
He has very feelings, so it started there when it was a bit... Ooh.
Was she 15, 16? Is she supposed to be? I don't know.
But fair enough. They were trying to go back into the continuity.
But then that contradicts, or does it contradict, what happened in the end of Days of Future Past?
Of course it does.
Mystique Stryker rescues Wolverine. What, does she then take him to Weapon X?
Yeah, I mean, no sense. It made no sense. I mean, at that point, I didn't remember that until you pointed it out to me after the movie, because at this point I was so up for anything. And I was just like, yes, they're going to the base, that means Wolverine's in there, and he was, and I was like, yes! So I was fully on board at this point. I was fucking loving it. They all get out, and handily enough, the military not only has a supersonic jet, but they have outfits that they can all wear to go to the final climactic battle with Apocalypse and his four horsemen.
Who's just trying to destroy the world.
Apocalypse's plan, having already rid the world of all its nuclear weapons, which I thought was kind of a cool scene. It was kind of...
Yeah, I thought they were going to go full on when he launches the nukes. He uses his mind powers, which I didn't know he had, to launch the nukes
via Charles.
From all the countries. So you see all these nukes go up from Russia, from America, and I'm like, are they actually going to like?
That would have taken some balls, wouldn't it? Yeah. I told you my name. That's the cartoon version.
Yeah.
I told you my name was Apocalypse. Oscar Isaac is actually much better actor than I am.
He's good, but I think he's wasted on that. I think, considering what he had to work with, he did really well.
Sure. I will concede to you that for as much as I enjoyed this movie, perhaps this final confrontation... it wasn't... I would have done it differently. I kind of felt all the stakes were up. One thing that really made me laugh is Magneto's, like, basically sucking up all the metal from the Earth ever. And once again is, like, making a bridge break, which he seems to do...
Does it a lot.
He seems to break every bridge.
I couldn't work out this. This is where, again, another thing it kind of fell down, where during that scene, he's talking to Charles and saying, this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to use your power to speak to the entire world and tell them that I'm Apocalypse.
This is Apocalypse, basically.
And you're all fucked. And he goes, right, Magneto.
Start
fucking it up. But just before that, Apocalypse uses his own powers to build a big fuck-off sci-fi pyramid.
Yeah.
And this is Egypt, right, I think it's supposed to be. Seen.
Yeah, it was basically the site of his old pyramid.
Yeah,
unfortunately, Cairo's in the way, but he's stacking it on top.
Exactly, he stacks, using his powers of his mind or whatever, to create his massive, massive pyramid. And I'm like, okay, right, you've just done that. Why do you need Magneto to usher up submarines from the bottom of the ocean and ships and create some kind of weird tidal wave of metal? Because bearing in mind, this scene must, in real time, is probably going on for about an hour or so, where he's using his powers, Magneto's using his powers to conjure up this stuff. Apocalypse just created a pyramid in 5 minutes, less than that. Why does he need him to do that? If he can do that, why can't he just flatten the rest of the world?
He's stuck in his routine. I'm the same when I'm playing real-time strategy games. I always build my base the same way.
Okay.
And I always have my troops go off and do the same thing. And I think...
He's a sharer. He just doesn't want to do it on himself.
He's got a theme and a motif. He's got to have his horsemen do the work. And he's not going to rely on armies anymore. So it is the horsemen that have got to bear the brunt of it.
Alright. So Magneto does that. What are the other horsemen doing? What's their role?
They should have been protecting him whilst he transfers himself and Charles over.
Right.
However, once again, wily, plucky humans stroke mutants get the upper hand and they have to abandon their master, which they shouldn't have done. It didn't work. That's exactly what led to his downfall last time. But off they go. We get a great fight between Angel and Nightcrawler.
It was quite cool.
Nightcrawler. I'll concede that Psylocke didn't do a lot.
She did nothing.
She did nothing but pout. She literally leaves the movie by pouting.
Yeah.
When she sees...
It's a heel turn, a pout and a heel turn, and she's gone.
Yeah.
Storm did nothing. And
Storm literally watched.
Yeah. I'm sure she may well be a great actress, but she was giving nothing to work with.
Yeah. Beast was taking names.
Yeah, but again, his plot, I mean, so...
He was just hanging about.
Well, again, they kind of make concessions to the previous movies where...
Yeah.
You know, First Class, there was a love affair between him and Mystique.
Yeah.
It's touched upon in Days of Future Past.
Mm.
And you kind of get a taste of it when Mystique rocks up at the mansion, Nicholas Holt sees her and he's got that kind of like...
Ooh, you're not blue.
Yeah, well, no, he's got that little boy lost. He's like, oh, it's good to see you. And, you know,
he does that really well.
Does that really well. And then it's kind of like, that's it. And then, again, one of my laugh out loud moments was right at the end of the movie where, is Mystique going to get killed? And then suddenly she's not. Mm. And then Beast rescues her, grabs her and goes, I love you. That's it. They're like, we tick the box and that's that plot done. They live happily ever after. And it's completely dismissed. It's like, well, is that it? Is that your character development for Beast?
For as epic as this fight is, it's more about the new kids getting their power. I thought it was really fucking awesome when Apocalypse breaks Quicksilver's leg.
Yeah.
Oh, you bastard.
Yeah.
You completely disabled him.
He was a standout character.
He was an amazing character, not given enough to do. This is about Cyclops finally letting go and just giving everything a good blast with his laser, which was good. And of course, Jean Grey going full Phoenix, which was fucking awesome. At that point, I was just standing up and being like, yes, Queen, yes!
Yeah, that was good.
There was, however, a lot of problems with this end fight. And the one we both laughed at was when Charles decides to battle Apocalypse in his mind, and just some of the worst camera framing I've ever seen. Basically looks like he's being prison raped by Apocalypse.
Yes, because if you know your comics and you remember the cartoon, you know the Apocalypse can grow to gigantic size. If you've seen the trailers, you would think that's going to happen in the movie, but it only happens in the dream sequence.
So which I thought was a nice way of bringing it in, just but, some damn unfortunate angles.
Yeah, there was a bit when he's lit Charles is on his front. And
Apocalypse is behind him going, oh, it's all over for you, Charles.
You're mine, Charles.
That's quite a good, Oscar Isaacs. That's good.
Just relax. You'll thank me for this in 20 minutes.
I'm going in dry, Charles. it's terrible framing.
Yeah.
I don't know who passed on that. Well, it's Brian Singer passed on that. Yeah. Sorry, Brian. You messed up there. But it's a big... big last fight, Jean Grey.
Did you not laugh when, funnily enough, Magneto joins the side of the good guys again?
I'd forgotten about this.
And to stop Apocalypse from marching his way to, an unconscious Xavier?
Yeah.
He throws down two metal girders that land in the shape of an X.
That's fine. I was totally on board because, Jean Grey's doing her Phoenix thing and I'm like, yes, and they made an X, yes! I was totally on board with it.
To be honest, the woman next to me was spaffing at the point. She was like, oh my God, that's so cool! And I was like, I'm just not the audience. This woman here is the audience. She fucking loved it. All the way through.
Loved it!
All the way through. When Magneto got his helmet,
yeah,
she was like, oh yeah, great, I don't know.
And okay, it just kind of ends, doesn't it? The world's saved.
Yeah. Charles has lost his hair.
Charles has lost his hair again. And Raven stroke Mystique is now back on side. And they're back in the simulation room that you're used to seeing in the cartoons and comics.
Yeah, that's the final scene is them
fighting some Sentinels.
Yeah, giving a pep talk in the Danger Room. Which, and you probably didn't remember this, but did the dialogue between Magneto and Xavier was lifted from the first X-Men movie.
Yeah.
You got that bit where it's like, you know, are you kept awake at night with the idea of someone coming to your school? And he's literally line for line, but 20 years before they said it in that movie. So it's like, they get amnesia and they just keep saying the same shit every time they see each other.
Well, that's what these movies in general suffer from, is just they piss all over each other's continuity.
It's going to get worse. The next X-Men movie, apparently, will be set in the 90s. So, are they not going to age again?
I don't know. I don't know if it'll happen. I hope it does.
Apparently it's going to be. So we've got next X-Men movie set in the 90s. Before that, we're going to get the New Mutants, which is a new younger bunch of mutants. And Xavier will be a part in that, whether it's played by McAvoy, Stewart, or someone else, we don't know yet. And you didn't stay for the end credits scene. I did. I fucking hate this movie. I stayed to the bitter end.
I had to take a phone call, unfortunately. But yeah, you stayed for the end credits sequence, which was...
Which was probably irrelevant, because since they just seem to ignore any kind of end sequences they do. This was basically set back in the Weapon X facility, and a besuited, sinister-looking... Actually, it's a good pun. That's what I'm going to say. Walked into the facility. They're doing clean-up. You know, they're scrubbing the floors, hoovering up the bullets, body bagging, and this gentleman goes to this container, takes out these vials which are marked Weapon X, puts them in a black briefcase, shuts the briefcase, and the lock has a name of the company. It's called Essex Corp. And my knowledge of comics is that Essex, Nathaniel Essex, is a character called Mr. Sinister, who's an enemy of Apocalypse, which is probably irrelevant because, the movies have gone off book.
Yeah.
Massively. So whether this is going to lead into Wolverine 3, which from what we understand is going to be set in the future and based on our old man Logan, whether this is going to be picked up in another X-Men movie, or whether this is just some kind of wanky scene that has absolutely no bearing on anything, which I think is probably the case.
Yeah.
Or actually, no, do you know what? I did think about this the other day. It may be linking into the next Deadpool movie.
Yeah.
Because Deadpool movie does say he was part of the Weapon X project, I think, or Barani. So maybe it's linking back to that. Because the next Deadpool movie is going to have Cable in it as well, who, in the comics, is the son of Cyclops and Jean Grey, who sent to the future after being poisoned by Apocalypse.
Well, there we go.
And then comes back as a 60-year-old Clint Eastwood-type guy. So he's actually older than his parents and very Terminator.
Well, that just kind of says it all. Like, for the strides that Marvel are making to sort of normalise all the superhero antics, and I think they will suffer when Thanos finally shows up. X-Men just remains silly, daft. I don't think they can do serious if their life depended on it.
No, and I think I've got a problem with that. I mean, I think what I did like about this, the bits I liked were the humour bits, were you know, the bits with Quicksilver, and actually, do you know what? Cody Smith as Nightcrawler was really good as well. He has some good comedy bits in it.
I don't think you and I are going to see eye to eye on this for the rest of our lives.
No.
It's
one of the worst superhero movies, I'd argue. It's definitely in a pecking order of X-Men movies. I probably need to see Last Stand again, because that was the worst out of the six movies. But you know what? This is...
I would put this just behind First Class as my favourite X-Men movie.
Sweet Lord.
All right, tell me, out of five then, what would you rate it?
Two.
All right, you're going with two. I'm going with... I concede that this movie has its problems, but I'm still going with five.
Fuck a duck.
I'm still going with five. I was thoroughly entertained from start to finish.
I would say, if you were ever curious as to what The Last Stand would have been like if Bryan Singer had done it, then... you can rest assured that it would have been equally as shit.
But there we go. You and I are never going to see eye to eye on this. I'm glad that we have differing opinions.
I was surprised. I came out of that and when I saw you, I was waiting for you to go, that was shite. And you were going, oh, it's better than Civil War. And I'm like, oh, you're serious.
But there we go.
You really liked it more than Civil War?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Blimey, okay.
There's parts I like and dislike in both movies. I found this movie more entertaining than Civil War. Unless you take that horse out of here. But yeah, there we go. There's our little review of X-Men Apocalypse. If you like me, go and see it. If you like Stu, maybe wait for the Blu-ray.
Or just gouge your eyes out?
Nah, you should go and see it. And either way, it's bloody fun. Go and see it for the Quicksilver scene alone.
Yeah, okay. I'd say that was good.
Well, there we go. We find some common ground at last. Well, join us next time when we should have Carly back with us. We should have seen Civil War by then, so no doubt we'll be talking to her about then.
If she hasn't, we'll fire her.
Yeah, just slacking. And we've got tons of comics that we want to talk to you about anyway that we've been reading, as well as the stuff that we've picked up at Free Comic Book Day.
Yes.
Yeah, so...
That's a story in itself, right, isn't it?
Indeed. There will be plenty of comic talk in the next episode. But what else would you expect on a comic book podcast? If you want to find me on Twitter, it's Neil Gortz with a Z. Stu, where can they find you?
You can find me under Stu Nami, and you can find us all collectively under BAM Comics Cast on Twitter. And also, this is your baby. You can drop the bomb on this one.
Oh, we've got a little Facebook page. You can give it a like.
Yeah, BAM Comics Cast.
Yeah. It's only new. Hardly anyone's there. You'll be amongst the first. You'll get the pick of the hors d'oeuvres if you go to it. And yeah, that's our little preview of X-Men Apocalypse.
We've ruined it for you.
Or we've accentuated it and made it even better. Yeah, thanks for listening. All right, we'll see you next time. Bye! And I'm going to leave you with the X-Men cartoon theme from the 90s.
Yeah.
There we go. You'll definitely cut that out.